The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the UAB Director's Chair. He is the director. He is the UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram, fresh off a big retreat with the UAB Blazers today. And, of course, he's down in his basement right now. This is where I'd be living. Is that what you're saying? This is where I'd be staying if, in fact, you took me in as your child?
Yeah, I just got home. We had a staff retreat today, and this is the only place in my house that I can ever find any quiet. So I knew that if I came here at the end of the day that I could get in the quiet space and do our weekly show here. So, yeah.
So is this, I hate the word man cave because it just, yeah, but
but it's just a place that my wife doesn't choose to go. So my smelly sons, they spend a lot of time down here, and I don't really get a chance to spend much time down here, to be honest with you, Tony, but today it is empty. So
I was going to say, where does Mark Ingram go in his humble abode, in his 8-7 estate? Where does he go to blow some steam off? Are you a garage guy? Are you a backyard smoking a cigar? Are you down in the basement? Are you in the bathroom? Where's your place?
Well, I like to be outside when I can be. Not smoking a cigar, but I mean, I like to be out piddling in the yard, and I've got, you know, pruning bushes and stuff like that usually is good for me. And we've got a pretty active neighborhood that we live in, a lot of good sidewalks, and so I can get out and walk or ride a bike, and I like to do that.
Are you one of those guys, that I see them in my neighborhood, if I'm ever driving home, and normally I'm not because I don't work 9 to 5, but if I'm driving home around 5:15, 5:30, maybe I pick the kids up from a meeting or something like that, and there's like a group of 5 or 6 guys on my street that are just walking around the front yard on the phone. You see those guys? they're in their suits. They got their handbag, the car door still open, and they're on the phone and they're just looking down towards the ground and they're just walking their driveways back and forth. Are you one of those, you know, I'm talking about, I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I'll tell you what that is. And so, the answer is yes and no. Yes, I am that guy. Not at that time. I wish it was that, but, here's what that is. That's a guy who, like me, is on a phone call. It's a work phone call. And if I walk in my house on the phone, I'm going to get a dirty look. So I'm trying to finish my call before I go in the house. So those guys you see that are wandering around the driveway or whatever, they're hoping their wife didn't hear them pull in the driveway. And they're trying to knock out the last 3 to 5 minutes of a call before they go in the house. Because if they go in the house on the phone, they either have a dog or a little kid climbing on them or something. And a wife give them a dirty look about, are you home or are you not home? Are you still at work? What are you doing?
There you go. They're definitely not inside then going back out. No, I mean,
I'm trying to knock that last call out. Yeah. And then I win and then I'm home. I'll be home.
You're spot on. Mark Ingram, he's the UAB Athletic Director for the UAB Blazers. Go Blazers. And of course, check out UABsports.com for all things UAB sports. 100 days till college football. We're recording the show here on May 16th. By the way, we have some really special things are going to be happening later on this summer with the UAB Athletic Department. We're really excited about. And so continue to listen to TKR and make sure you check out the UAB Sports website for all the details. But it's interesting. There are two big talking heads that have been coming out. Nick Saban's one of them. He was at the Regents Charity Classic this past weekend. So there were a lot of journalists and a lot of people. And we love, I'm coming from a journalist standpoint because I used to be in journalism. We love these spots to get coaches out on golf courses because sometimes they let their guard down a little bit. And sometimes you can kind of catch them off a little bit. You can ask them some questions perhaps you wouldn't normally do, you know, outside a halftime or a locker room. And so sometimes you get some really good quotes. And then there's another guy who is not working right now, and that would be Jimbo Fisher. And he does a weekend show or weekly show on his XM Sirius satellite show called Off Campus. I don't know if you've ever heard it. He said today, this is several hours ago, and I'm just quoting here, I'm going to be honest with you, college sports is the most unfair thing we do. College sports is unfair. It's because there are haves and have-nots. You think about how it's set up. Each commissioner and Greg Sankey's done an unbelievable job for the SEC. Big Ten commissioner has done an unbelievable job for them. There's only so many pieces of pie left. So you've taken them and they've hurt the ACC and the Big 12. And of course the Pac-12 who ended up folding. I think we have to find a way to come together and get ahead of college football. I don't like the inequities that are going on. It's not fair, but it's never been fair. You say the NCAA was the governing body. No, it wasn't, because each conference operated with autonomy to itself. They operated what made each conference the best. He specifically sees the NFL as the inevitable and potential path to saving college football as it rises in arguably America's second most popular sport behind the National Football League. Before I ask you any questions, your thoughts on what he just said there?
Well, there's a lot there. I mean, there are, to say that the NCAA is not in charge is false, but he's correct in that every conference also has conference rules that they adopt or they choose to adopt or not adopt. And you can adjust some of the transfer rules within your league. There are certain rules that you can kind of manipulate a little bit, but you're still managed by the NCAA and all of the rules roll up to that. I do agree that, as I've said many times on this show, that autonomy legislation was our downfall. Mm-hmm. And what that means is when we drew that invisible line and said, these are the autonomy conferences and these others are not, the autonomy conferences would go to various national meetings, Tony. And I wouldn't be invited to that meeting because I wasn't in the autonomy conference. So they would go and they would meet just those ADs. They would come out of it saying, we've changed rules for ourselves. And then, the group of five, Sun Belt, MAC, Conference USA, American, Mountain West, those rules would go to those commissioners. Commissioners would then say to the ADs, hey, let's discuss today's agenda. We're going to talk about autonomy legislation. This is what they've passed. Do we want to adopt that autonomy legislation? And the tragedy in all of it, Tony, is that in an effort to keep up, we would just say, yes, we'll adopt it.
Yeah.
And what I mean by tragedy is there was no discussion about, wait, does this make any sense? Just because they're doing it, or why are we doing it? Well, the answer why we were doing it was because we didn't want to fall behind, right? We didn't want to fall behind. And then thus, of course, we hurt recruiting, or our coaches feel like somehow they were hurting recruiting. And so we would just, yeah, okay, let's adopt it. And then we would, if it was something that was really expensive or that we knew we couldn't really do, we would say, hey, you can adopt it school by school. If your school doesn't want to adopt it, it's an institutional decision. And it'd be things like the rule change. It used to be that, like, when a kid took an official visit, you could only pay for, like, them to travel or them and their parents to travel. Well, now you can pay for anybody they want to bring. And so they're bringing their little brother, their little sister, their auntie, their cousin, their girlfriend, their whatever. And there's an army of 8 or 12 people, and that doesn't happen a ton, but it happens and it could happen. And you got to pay for it. Well, no, you are permitted to pay for it.
Yes.
And so it's like, what are we doing, man? I can't afford to pay for a weekend getaway for 12 people to Birmingham. If they're from, they got to fly here. And, it's one thing if I've got to pay their mileage and they piled up in a van or something. It's very different. I'm buying a bunch of plane tickets from New York or California or whatever. And so these are the kind of things that we would discuss and we would just get into it. I think coming back to the problem with autonomy legislation is it cut half of the really smart people out of the room. That's not to say that the people in the power, what is now the Power Four conferences, aren't smart, but collectively we're better together than we are separated. So that autonomy legislation led to, well, how about we take our football team to Italy for spring break? Yeah. And when you do that, then some people go, wait a minute. I knew you guys had money. I didn't know you had that kind of money. And you go and say, well, yeah, I mean, if we have the money, we should be able to do that and provide this opportunity for our kids. Well, saying that on the surface, I get that. But, the budget at Ohio State compared to Iowa State, they're both in Power Four conferences. Well, UAB's budget is closer to Iowa State than Iowa State is to Ohio State.
Yeah.
And so now Iowa State is trying to keep up with Ohio State, and they can't keep up with that either. And so just because you got anointed into these leagues because of a historical perspective, Northwestern, Wake Forest, Vanderbilt, Texas Tech, Iowa State, you know, what you would have said, Washington State, Oregon State, a lot of these schools, Cal's, you know, got real budget challenges, but they're in the autonomy group. So they're just, it's like, I don't know, like somebody just thinks they just have more. Mm-hmm. They're historically in those conferences and they got lumped into it. And, but that created, that invisible line created a financial difference that we have been suffering from, because if you worked at Nabisco and you were in charge of sports marketing for Nabisco, would you, in your decision of who to align with, would you align with this group of five conferences over here or the Power Five? You're going to align with the Power Five. So the reason the TV money is so big is because all the marketing money has shifted to supporting them, which gives them the money to pay those conferences. So it's a little bit of a self-fulfilled prophecy. I mean, they were more profitable. Now it's gross.
This feels like a bad breakup to me. This feels like a girl trying to let a guy down easy. And the girls obviously are the autonomy, and this is the way it's going to be. And we can stay together and everything's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. But you're sitting there going, now you're making me sleep on the couch. Okay. And now you're going to make me sleep out in the garage. It's unfortunate. I think what kind of surprised me about what Jimbo said was that he pinpointed the SEC and the Big Ten outside. So, I mean, the autonomy was five and then it's four. And now all of a sudden it's just those two conferences. Is that fair?
Yeah. It is. I mean, the national belief is that the SEC and the Big Ten are going to cut the ACC and the Big 12 out. Maybe they won't. And that they're going to cut the Group of Five out. Maybe they won't. I hope they don't. I think our involvement is important. I know some of those commissioners have fought for that. They've told me they did. That, you know, they like to play us. They like to, they certainly don't mind stealing our coaches, you know, when they need a coach. Mm-hmm. Where do they look to get those coaches? They come looking at us, people that have had success at our level, and they think, well, that hopefully that will translate. They're not first time head coaches. They've managed a program, managed recruiting, managed players, managed all these people, managed a budget.
Yeah, and let's be honest too. It's giving guys like Hugh Freeze a second shot too.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's some. I mean, Terry Bowden. A guy one time won 20 games straight at Auburn, and next thing you know, he's at the Akron Zips. I mean, it's given some of these other coaches a second chance of life, too.
Lane Kiffin, Bobby Petrino.
Yeah. You
list Coach Rich Rodriguez is at Jacksonville State right now. I mean, there's a lot of people. If you spend some time on that topic, you could find a lot of people.
Prime time. I mean, I know it's in Colorado, but I mean, you know, it wasn't like he was going to be going to the SEC for his first coaching gig. So, yeah, I keep trying to. This bomb went off in our face, and we act like we're surprised by it, and I don't know why. I mean, we took these two wires and we kept tapping them together and kept saying, "Well, I ain't blown up yet," and it blows up in your face, and we're wondering what just happened. And, right. and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, where did we go wrong? And I know you were talking about the autonomy aspect of it, but yeah. I don't see where it was broken. We always talked about. You know, the argument was, do we want to pay the players and do the players deserve to be paid? And we were all like, you're getting free education. You go to Boston College, it's $100,000 a year. You're getting 4 years of free. That's where you're getting your pay. So that's where you're kind of, that was even kind of a creepy, you know, let's face it. You're getting paid with a scholarship, right? So you're getting paid to play.
So the sport that you say you love, that you have trained to be better at your whole life and traveled all over the country and had specialized coaches and one-on-one training and gone to all these camps to promote yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we talked about today, I was on ABC 3340 with Jeff Spiegs. We were talking some sports and what we talked about is, you know, are we thinking about the 18-year-old and the 19-year-old in this particular case? You know, my kid goes to Clemson, right? And he can take any Monday off he wants during the season because he's a freshman. And freshmen get homesick. And anyone's got a kid will tell you that if they have to move away from home 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, that you get homesick. You do. And there are some times where, you know, he come home and didn't want to go back to school. And I certainly understood that. And so he didn't have to worry about missing any school days. He could make up his work. So I'm thinking, you know, we had an 18-year-old kid, let's just say an inner city school, who's gone and had this whirlwind of 6 or 7 different invites to big schools around the country. He's picked a school. He's all in. I've been part of the move-in process. They're there with the whole idea that if this doesn't work for Jimmy, that we're going to come back in a few months and tell him to pack his stuff up and move cross country to another school where he's going to get a chance to play and get paid. Is anyone asking Jimmy what he thinks about this? This 18-year-old is going to have to pick up. I mean, professional players don't like to move. They don't like to have to pack up their stuff every 3 or 4 years and go move to another city because you have to get around a different group of people and you lost your friends and everything into your family. You know, gosh, if you have a family, my goodness, that throws a... Sometimes I wonder if these kids, they know what they're getting themselves into. We're flashing $100 bills in their face and they're just like, it's something flashy and something bright and they're jumping towards it. And the parents are kind of running the show here, or the commissioners, depending on how you look at it. And are we really doing what's best for our children? What are we doing best for the college student at this point?
Yeah. And I think the question becomes just the discussion on employment or any of that sort of thing, or additional compensation. And we're following this, you know, House versus NCAA case very closely to see what that could mean. And this back payment, the hilarious part is that there's this alleged almost $3 billion that's going to be owed to student athletes who competed over the last 10 years, but only the ones that were in the Power Five now.
They're the only ones that
the ability to earn money from their name, image, and likeness. I mean, we got Garrett Whitlock from UAB, who's a starting pitcher for the Red Sox. I guess he doesn't count. I guess he probably couldn't have profited from his name, image, and likeness. Guys like Roddy White, no, they probably couldn't have. It's just such a stupid, stupid, nonsensical. It's like the morons and the plaintiffs are so stupid, they don't even think about that.
Yeah.
You know, that as if the only people that are playing professional sports or have any value must have been in the Power Five. That must be the only ones that should get any back pay. I think the back pay is, again, it's moronic, but it's just without any merit or rational thought. And so then the next thing is, and we might have to start spending $20 or $22 million a year in additional compensation to these athletes. Well, which athletes? Which athletes are we talking about? Just football players? Football and basketball players, football and men's and women's basketball players. What about baseball players? What about soccer? What about and on, which ones? And then where does that money come from?
Do you straight out? Do you see, let's just say there's 120 college football programs right now, just to find a nice round number. They come up with this situation where they're going to settle out so we don't have to spend $3 billion and retroactively pay all these players and the antitrust lawsuits are dropped and everything else. Do you see programs having to close shop? Are there going to be universities? I mean, and how many are we talking here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's about 130 of us, and there's, I don't know how many will shut football down, but I don't know how you pay for, I don't just have cash sitting around that I don't spend. So, and we get a pretty large portion of our budget from the university. So I'm not funding any of this on my own without help from the institution. So the only way that I could do it is to have fewer sports than I have. Is that dropping 10 sports or something? I mean, again, I don't know the people that are the plaintiffs. Have they thought so far as to how that would occur?
Yeah.
All right, the salaries of all those wealthy coaches. Yeah. We don't have a lot of wealthy coaches.
Yeah.
Maybe some other leagues do. And I certainly have a couple of coaches that are well compensated compared to the average American, but they've earned that through a lifetime of experience. Mm-hmm. You know, 30% of the kids on every one of our teams will never play for us. 30%. Oh. That's not my opinion. That is a statistical fact.
Yeah.
30%. And if you look at the ones that are on full scholarships, if we were really talking about value, but 30% maybe are overpaid. You know, so just this idea that it's almost like the plaintiffs are suggesting that every Power Five athlete or college athlete is an All-American. Mm-hmm. They're everyone's a first rounder. Hey man, there's a role for everybody, you know, and it's okay that you're not a first rounder. It's okay that you're not a draft pick or even a starter. That's okay. Everybody has a role. But the plaintiff's argument is as if everyone is a significant contributor at an all-star quality level and should be paid as such.
I think where it really got wrong for me is when I learned that some schools were paying any position player a certain amount of money. I heard it was A&M. I don't know, LSU, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I had heard that, you know, if you sign with them, you're getting $20,000 to play next year through the collective, regardless of who you are, third string. And that's where that, I mean, I get it where, you know, Johnny come lately, Johnny Manziel comes in and changes the world at his university. I get that. And he deserves certainly to get some type of money. Now, you know, he obviously didn't do really well from a professional standpoint, but I think he's doing okay for himself. But those are far and few between. What's that?
I said, I think he acknowledges all that too.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So let's assume that somehow we clean this up. And again, we're acting like we're surprised this is happening. It's been a volcano ready to go off for years. It's the Yellowstone, the super volcano. And all of a sudden it's going off. Yep. And we're surprised.
Yeah.
If we get past the antitrust lawsuits and we settle everything out, I'm not even sure what it's going to look like at that point, but what issues do you see with the new model, or can you even go there yet?
I mean, it's just a million issues. I mean, so if they are employees, I'll say this, here's just one little one that nobody, because people only focus on football and men's basketball. Mm-hmm. When we recruit, I'm going to tell you, we've got 450 or so student athletes. This changes year to year, but somewhere in the 11 or 12% of those athletes are from another country. Okay, so let's just call that 50-ish of the 450 from another country. Mm-hmm. We get them in on a student visa, and it's not easy to do, but hiring them, if they were an employee, hiring an international employee is super hard and takes a ton of time. And so if they were employees, can you imagine how long it would take to them, their background checks and the employment process? I mean, it's crazy hard. It's crazy. So that's one. Right now, scholarships are not taxable income. Additional payments would be, like, just like payments from collectives. Those are that's taxable income. So there's a tax issue that I don't think anybody's prepared to think about. Again, there could be all sorts of, you know, employment-related policies that students could violate. And then you got to ask yourself, I'm an employee that represents UAB. As an employee that represents UAB, I don't go to school. I don't go to college to represent UAB. So why does my point guard, who's an employee that represents UAB, why does my point guard have to go to college?
Yeah.
Oh, now we've eliminated the college model completely altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and then what do? I pay for their scholarship and give them more money, or do I just pay them a number and then they have to pay for their scholarship? And then as an employee, in order for me to afford all this, do I have to start charging them a gym membership to use my weight room? And they can use my weight room, but if they want a personal trainer, i.e. my strength coach, they got to pay an fee. And what about the nutritionist that works with them and helps them for all their dietary and nutrition needs? Should they have to pay them? I mean, you, Tony Curry, would have to do that. So do they have to do that? And do they all of a sudden have to start paying for all their tutors? And if they did pay for all their tutors that today the athletic department pays, would they pay those tutors? Would they even opt to use those tutors? And now how do their grades look? And they're, again, come back to school. And there's just all these other things they get that they don't pay for.
Yeah.
And so a matter of, does that all become taxable income or not? And maybe they don't pay for those things, but maybe I have to start providing it as like an in-kind service that they're receiving, which becomes like taxable income. So, hey, we paid you $30,000, but then we gave you, you know, $20,000 in taxable benefits. You're going to have to pay a huge chunk of money back to the IRS for all these other ancillary benefits that you're receiving as an employee. I just think it's a mountain of stuff.
Yeah. Have you seen, and then we'll talk some classic rock, have you seen any changes in philosophies as far as in recruiting goes with the transfer portal? I know that's one thing that we're probably not going to be. I don't know if it's a legal thing or not, whether that's even part of this discussion. I do think it's really strange that you can go play for seven different schools in seven different years. That's weird. And, And there's just no loyalty there. And I mean, I don't even know why we're doing visits to universities anymore, unless we're just doing it for the kids that obviously want to stay. But now with 20% of all student athletes wanting to transfer, and I get you got a sick grandma at home. I understand those kind of things. But I'm just talking about I don't like it here. I'm not getting enough playing time, or I'm not making enough money. I want to move. Will any of that change, do you think?
Good question. I don't know that changes in the short term. I mean, I think that, I agree with you that it's unfortunate that people can go from one school to the next. Statistically, again, the more you transfer, the less likely you are to graduate. That's in the current model. If that turns again into an employment model, who knows if they even have to go to college, which is just sad, because we started off with using sports as an avenue for people to get an education. Mm. That's what we started off as. We saw that when we played sports and competed against other school, it brought people together like our alumni, so that we could then talk to them about, you know, various research we were doing or stuff that we were doing that was economic impact to our community or the world. And we got other, you know, alumni engaged in that, and the sports brought them to campus, and then it's like putting fish in a barrel. It gave us an opportunity to show and demonstrate, look at what we're doing. We could use your help with this. And that's how Yale and Harvard did it when they first started playing basketball. They didn't get together to see who could better execute the pick and roll. They got together because it brought people together. So they played basketball and stuff together and football because it brought their people together so they could talk about their university, could market their institution. That is still true. Mm-hmm. But education is gone. I'm not sure that is still true.
So I'm really excited here on this Thursday, the 16th, because May 17th will be the first time in nearly 7 years that AC/DC has done a worldwide tour. Now, they played a show back this last October, that Power Up thing out there in Coachella, out there in Indio, California, with Judas Priest. And it was, yep, it was unbelievable. And we've been waiting for this because I'm a big AC/DC fan, and I do a show called Live Wire Wednesday, where I have nearly 42,000 people in Sydney, Australia, listen every Wednesday night, because that's where their official fan club is. It's huge. It's one of our biggest listening shows from an international footprint. And I'm excited that they're back on the road. They're going to be starting their tour in Germany, right? Then they go, they go to Switzerland, Vienna. They're going to Paris, the London, and they finish up, I think, in Ireland or Belgium or somewhere like that. And then, of course, they'll have another leg to the tour. I know that Angus sounds fantastic, but I also know that Brian Johnson does not sound good. I don't know. I mean, we were like, oh, Axl Rose, you know, filling in. I welcomed it because I know he can sing. He can hit the notes. Brian, after about a week, will be finished. I mean, he's toast. Forget the hearing aspects. He can't sing. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I mean, I will go, and they're my favorite band of all time. So there's a bittersweet moment there for the fact that I know I'm going to be catching the second leg, and I know they're going to be toast by the time they come play Atlanta or Nashville or hopefully the Birmingham area. What's your thoughts on these guys that are doing it for the fan? They've sold 3 million tickets in the first 4 days or something. I mean, obviously there are a lot of people that want to go see them play, and this would be your last shot to go see this band play. So is that something that, are you a guy, I better go see them before it's all over? Are you, I want to see them before I die kind of guy, or does it?
I would like to see them. I don't know that it's the show I have to go see. There's a lot of people that I haven't seen, and they're one that I wish I had. I'm not sure I want to see them now. It's kind of like the Rolling Stones right now. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to me. I got to tell you, it's amazing to me how popular bands like AC/DC are in Europe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will start these shows up. It's like Iron Maiden tours almost exclusively in Europe and Asia.
30,000 people, they'll get in a place. Iron Maiden plays here, we may get 800. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yes, killing it. And but that music, I don't know if there's a delay in popularity from one side of the world to the other. But I mean, rock music in Europe is so exciting and popular. I mean, I guess I don't blame these bands, but you're right. It's like they'll go sell out a stadium over there and come over here and, you know, can't sell out the Electric Ballroom.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, they're playing Wembley. They're playing arenas over there. And again, they may play Madison Square Garden. I don't know if they could play a Protective or something here, which would be awesome, by the way.
Yeah. That yeah. Awesome.
Finally, this is music related, but it kind of goes along the same thing I wanted to throw out there. They just announced they're making Happy Gilmore 2. Dude, I'm just like, listen, I understand right now there are 17 movies that either came out last week or are going to be released through Memorial Day that are sequels, prequels, or remakes. You got Bad Boys is back with Will Smith. He's out. You've got Planet of the Apes. You've got another Godzilla movie. I mean, they're just remakes of remakes of remakes of remakes. But we continue to go. In some cases, like a Batman, I get it because Batman keeps evolving. They keep changing the Batman himself, and they're done really, really well. Some of those movies are. I'm not saying they just pile on bad movie after bad movie, but a lot of them aren't Godfathers either. You know, the second's always better than the first. You never see that. But I'm thinking to myself, aren't there some things we should just leave well enough alone? Yeah. The last time this happened, it was the Blues Brothers. I'm like, you don't want to screw with Will Ferrell was offered $30 million to do Elf 2. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'd go see that. Because it's Will Ferrell, and I think it'd be pretty funny. Anchorman, definitely. I think another one needed to be done. But I'm thinking to myself, because Gilmore made like $46 million the first time around. It was nothing when it came out. It was a cult classic. It's something that if you see on a Saturday afternoon, you'll watch it and see him and Bob Barker get after it on the green. But I mean, sure. do we really need a Happy Gilmore 2?
I'm not sure that Happy Gilmore 1 was that good. It has some funny moments, and I've certainly seen it more than a couple of times, but it's not that great to need a sequel. I think, you know, there's a lot of times when you have these movies that have sequels that are not nearly as good as the first. They're almost never as good as the first, quite frankly. It's just when you feel like there's more story to tell, should you be telling that story? And I'm not sure Happy Gilmore fits into that.
Yeah.
They tried to do a Caddyshack 2, and it Caddyshack 1 is incredible.
Caddyshack 2 is horrible.
Horrible. And so, you know, you can't just recreate that kind of stuff all the time. Yeah, I don't know that I would do Elf movie, but hey, no, whatever.
They tried to redo the whole National Lampoon thing, which was terrible. I mean, it was horrible. Have you ever seen, I'm sure you've seen A Christmas Story.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The old TV show set in Cleveland back in the 80s or 70s or whatever. The dude, Ralphie, who was in that movie, they came out with a Christmas. What's that?
Peter Billingsley.
He came out with another Christmas Story this past year. It was one of those things that was released on Netflix.
And I
gritted my teeth because I was like, oh, please, because they brought back a lot of the people that were in the original show. And that movie is about 40 years ago. Obviously, the father's gone. Yep. The mother was someone. It was really cute. It was. I'm glad I really was. I watched it. It was a Sunday afternoon before Christmas. I thought I'm going to give this a shot because I revere the first one as one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time. My dad used to watch it before he died. He used to watch it 24 hours a day.
I love it.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, I watched it and it's the best way. It's cute. It's not excellent. It's not like, oh my God, it's a great, but I mean, it brings back all the old characters and you get the tongue and the pole and the whole line. And it was really, so sometimes, you know, you can take some things and really revere the original for what it's worth. And really it was about his dad anyway. So anyway,
I'm glad to hear that. I'd like to watch that because I love the first one.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Billingsley, kind of like Ralph Macchio, kind of like Luke Skywalker, kind of like Fred Savage, really has struggled to get work. And you mentioned Elf. He's in Elf.
He is an Elf. Yeah, he sure is.
He's in Elf. But he's in this monster movie as a kid. And then all people see him is that kid with the red glasses and he hadn't been able to overcome it. Kind of like
you should watch the movie and you don't have to wait till Christmas to watch it. You can go rent it. You can get it for free now, but go watch it. It's cute. It's something you can watch with your kids. And it's cute. You'll like it. All right, my man. Go do your thing. We'll catch up again next week. UABsports.com. Check out their website for everything that UAB does. And he is Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletic Director. And this is the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week. Thank you, my friend. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, brother. See you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.